case number 10-136. Kenneth Dunn, Cooper Petitioner versus National Transit Agency Board et al. Mr. Blair, for the petitioner, Ms. Rodriguez, for the comments.
May it please court, counsel. My name is Gary Belair, and my appearance today is on behalf of Kenneth Cooper. This case is a little change of pace for the court. This case concerns an emergency revocation of an airman's medical certificate.
Why do you think it's a change of pace? I feel like I've sat on about 10 of these. And I know Judge Brown has also sat on as many, and I imagine Judge Rogers has. So.
Well, I guess in the sense that the court is well familiar with these types of cases, it's certainly not a change of pace. I was referring to the immediately preceding argument.
Fair point.
And we are appreciative of the fact that the court is so well aware of these types of cases, because this case is much like the case in Dillman, Singleton, or Marlin. Each of those cases concerned an emergency revocation, and each of them concerned the idea that the airman had, in fact, falsified an application. And in this particular case, the application at issue is a medical application for a second-class airman certificate. The application was filled out at a time nearly 2 years after an incident occurred where Mr. Cooper was pulled over by a Texas trooper. He was cited, and
is it right that there's really no dispute about the facts?
There's really no dispute about the facts.
Your client's point is he knew that he had been arrested and suspended, but he didn't read the questions, and therefore he couldn't, his answer wasn't intentional, right?
That is a large part of the argument, yes, Your Honor.
So how, given that the agency previously held on very similar facts in Boardman, that did constitute intentional false statement, what is left?
Your Honor, what makes this case different from Boardman is the fact that the agency brought a claim concerning the airman's failure to report the incident initially. That issue was taken up by the administrative law judge as well, and that issue was resolved in favor of Mr. Cooper. It was resolved in Mr. Cooper because Mr. Cooper put on evidence showing that he had, in fact, received notice of the suspension, and within 2 days of receiving that notice, he prepared and sent a letter to the FAA. Now, the FAA maintains they never received the letter. That's not important. What is important is that Mr. Cooper has in his mind a state of mind that he has already self-reported the problem.
That wouldn't make any difference, right? He didn't read the documents, so whatever he had in his mind, the Boardman case rule is if you don't read the questions and you answer falsely, and you knowingly don't read the questions, then that's the necessary intent.
We're saying in this particular case, intent is not established under the Boardman scenario because one cannot have an intent to falsify an answer when they've already gone about reporting the problem. It is a question that was asked of the investigator, and the investigator said he had absolutely no explanation for why anyone in their right mind, so to speak, would go ahead and answer a question falsely after having reported the very incident. And that's the gist of the whole argument, is that you can't have an intent to falsify under circumstances where you've already fessed up to the crime, so to speak. So,
what was the evidence of reporting other than his statement?
I'm sorry?
Is there any evidence that he reported other than his statement? Did he have a copy of the report?
There is no evidence received by the FAA. There was evidence proffered by Mr. Cooper and his son, both of whom talked about the letter that they sent to the FAA and talked about the gist of it. There also is an exhibit, which is a copy of the letter that Mr. Cooper sent, but it is not a file-stamped FAA received copy or anything of that nature.
What did the ALJ find with regard to the letter?
The ALJ found at least two things. One was is that he believed the testimony that the report was made timely. Secondly, he decided that there was, in fact, no evidence of the scienter of Mr. Cooper.
Right, but he credited the testimony about that the letter was sent.
He credited the testimony that the letter was sent.
And the board didn't reverse that.
The board did not even get a chance to do anything more than a footnote because that the FAA did not attack that finding at all.
From the agency's point of view, the rule you're requiring is dangerous, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
If we agree with you, that leads to a sort of dangerous incentive from the agency's point of view, doesn't it?
Your Honor, I don't envision the circumstances of this type of case coming up very often where somebody has self-reported and is under the belief that the agency is already fully aware of it. And you've also got the distinguishing factor that the FAA, in fact, changed its form at a period of time.
Well, go ahead, sir. Just to follow up on that, Mr. Cooper has to certify that he's answered these questions, truthfully to the best of his knowledge. How can you reconcile that with saying, well, I didn't read them? Because, in fact, the form did change.
Your Honor, I can reconcile it in my mind by saying that people are lazy. They sometimes don't read, even though they say they do. They oftentimes don't read.
That's the point of my question. From the agency's point of view, they're certifying that this person is qualified to fly these planes, among other things.
And
for your rule, the agency is blindsided. You know, I don't even know if it would be a different case if he filed the form on Monday and Tuesday he sends the letter saying, I made a mistake on the form. I should have checked yes when I checked no to question 8B. Maybe there you wouldn't find any evidence or you wouldn't presume any evidence of agency reliance on his application because it had been self-corrected before the agency took any action.
And there's not a latches argument in this case.
No, I understand.
But there is an extreme delay of time that occurred. The initial application, medical application that Mr. Cooper made immediately after the traffic stop, he was able to give honest answers at that time. But it was because the form changed, to allay the court's concerns, maybe the FAA should take some responsibility and say this form has changed in this particular regard rather than showing somebody a form that looks like the one that they have filled out over the last 22 years.
Well, if they had said that written on the top, he wouldn't have read it anyway, isn't that right?
Your Honor,
he didn't read the form.
Well, we all know that statement can't be entirely true because he couldn't even have filled out the answers had he not made a corresponding relationship between question one and question one.
But his argument is he just took his old form and copied it on the new form.
That's exactly what he did, is he relied too much on the old form. Your Honor, I see I'm into my closing time, if I may.
Okay. I thought he said that he didn't read the questions.
I'm sorry?
I thought he testified that he did not read the questions.
That is true. He said right out that he did not read it, but I'm saying is that you had to do more than not look at it at all. You must have digested some part of the form. But did he do it word for word like an attorney might do reading a contract that you're about to execute? Don't think there's any question that he didn't do that at all.
About this, where he signs at the bottom that says, I hereby certify that the statements and answers are complete and true, and I agree they are to be considered part of the basis. Did he read that before he signed it?
I have no idea that he read that any better than he read the rest parts of the form.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Agnes Rodriguez on behalf of the Federal Aviation Administration. Scienter is assessed at the time that the false statement is made. And according to Mr. Cooper's testimony, his only reason for making a materially false statement in response to question 18B on his medical application was that he didn't read the question before he answered it. And as this court has already observed, what he actually did was take his application that he'd completed 2 years before that and simply copy his answers on from the old application onto the new one. Knowing this, he nevertheless certified that his answers were true and complete to the best of his knowledge, and he tendered that application so that the FAA could use that information to make a determination regarding his medical qualifications. And had the aviation medical examiner who examined Mr. Cooper upon receiving this application known the truth, he would have been required to defer the medical application and not issue Mr. Cooper a medical certificate, as he ended up doing in this case, based on the false response to question 18B. As a general proposition
of law— Can I just be clear? Is the process that you file the medical certificate application and then you are personally, physically examined?
That's correct. And then at the conclusion of the examination, the aviation medical examiner makes a determination based on the history that he's evaluated and the medical examination results, whether to issue a medical certificate, whether to defer for further evaluation, or whether he's going to deny
the examiner has this form at the time?
Yes, the examiner receives. And that's the point, too.
Would the examiner also have, had it been the case that the plaintiff had actually sent in the letter, as he said he did, would the examiner have that?
The examiner only works from the medical applications. If the information is not on the medical application and it's not disclosed to the aviation medical examiner during the course of the examination, the medical examiner does not have access to any letter that he might have sent 2 years before regarding the same thing. And the letter that was sent 2 years before doesn't alter the fact that he still had an obligation when he was confronted with the medical application and the specific questions that he had to answer, that it didn't alter the fact that what he set forth on that medical application 2 years later as a truthful response to 18V was in fact false.
I must say, the form is not the clearest thing in the world. I had to hunt for 18V because it wasn't in order. And there is some point about not trapping citizens, that if an agency is going to put out a form like that, maybe there ought to be at the front. Read carefully. Some questions have changed. Not that that would have made any difference in this case, but...
Well, and the question in this case that changed didn't change significantly. It simply added a requirement to also disclose any history of arrests.
I think that was a response to one of this circuit's previous decisions.
Right. I'm sorry, what?
That was a response to one of this circuit's previous decisions.
Right. And so, but in this particular case, you know, as a general proposition of law, individuals who sign forms and later claim they did not read are held to have intended the falsity of the
representative. How does that square with our decision in Dillman that intent means knowing and knowing means subjective knowledge?
Well, in the particular facts as presented in Dillman, that was certainly the case because Mr. Dillman had actually engaged in considering what the question meant in the and it was an issue of how Mr. Dillman understood the question. That was an issue where his subjective understanding of the question was an issue, and whether, in fact, given how he subjectively understood, and to the extent that that subjective understanding was credited by the judge as the reason for the incorrect statement on the medical.
The problem in Dillman was that the board, that the FAA had been taking the position in that case that subjective knowledge wasn't required, while its precedents had said that it was. So I guess my question here again is, how does this fit within an appropriate definition of knowing?
Well, it fits within an appropriate definition of knowing when you look at, when you look generally at the common law principles from which the elements of intentional falsification derive under
Hartford. You're talking about willful blindness.
So I'm sorry?
Willful blindness, something like
yes,
that?
Yes, exactly. And while the board, when it decided its had its discussion in Boardman with regard to the viability of a defense that somebody could defend an intentional falsification charge by saying, I did not have the requisite scienter because I did not read
Boardman,
the question.
Boardman reads knowing as willful disregard.
That's correct. And that's why, that an airman who would, in a situation such as this, because it's important to understand here that, you know, the integrity of the system by which airmen are medically and technically qualified depends on the honesty and the integrity of the individuals who submit themselves to the FAA certification process. And as the board noted toward the end of its decision here in Cooper, the failure to read a question before answering it, in this particular context where there's so much trust placed on the accuracy of the information that is being provided.
So this is all a policy argument for why the word should be read this way.
It's a legal argument. I mean, certainly a policy argument. Yes, you're correct, Your Honor. With respect to what that means, that it renders the application process pointless.
I agree with you about what Boardman says. Mm-hmm. I even think that what Boardman says is sensible. But my question is what it says consistent with your regulation?
Talks
about intentional.
Well, it is because the regulation, the underpinnings of the regulation are the common law. And what the board said in Boardman squares with what the common law requires. With respect to being able to show knowledge under the common law, you can show the knowledge element by one of two ways, by either showing that at the time that the falsity was uttered, that it was known to be untrue, or where there was a reckless disregard for the truth, where the person is intending, like Mr. Cooper was in this case, to convey the impression that he had actual knowledge of the matters to which he was representing to the aviation medical examiner when he was conscious he did not. He had not read the questions, and he was submitting that application for the purpose that it be relied on for purposes of making a medical qualifications determination. And they related to matters that Mr. Cooper was bound to know. And not only was he bound to know the history, he admitted on cross-examination that at the time he was filling out this application by transferring his answers from the previous one, he was aware that he'd been arrested for DUI, and he was aware that his driver's license had been suspended. So he was aware of those things.
Summarize, your argument is this is willful disregard, is that right?
That is correct. And that is the standard under Boardman. It's also consistent with the standard under the common law for how a person is held accountable for having knowledge.
So what do you think of the Supreme Court's opinion in Global Tech then?
I'm not familiar with that decision, Your Honor.
Well, so in June of this year, the Supreme Court defined willful blindness as described in the common law. And it did say that willful blindness was an acceptable definition of knowing, but it said one of the elements of willful blindness has to be, at least for purposes of criminal and one civil statute, that the defendant must subjectively believe that there's a high probability that the fact exists and then decides not to hear that fact. Now, as I read Boardman, it does not include the subjective belief in high probability.
Well, the reasoning in Boardman is that an airman who knowing, who tenders an application in the manner that Mr. Cooper did in this case, where they don't read the application, knowing that they have not conscientiously prepared it, knowing that they are nonetheless conveying the impression that they are presenting
information. There's no part of Boardman that he has to know that there might be something in there, that there's a high probability of something in there that he doesn't want to answer.
I mean, that could very well be, but in the reasoning in Boardman, it's that under that the person is inviting, Mr. Cooper has completed, you know, over 20 applications over his many years as a pilot. He's well aware of what this medical application process is all about.
That's right, and it's become a matter of rote to him. You know, he just copies.
But even as this court noted that there's an obligation on the part of the airman to carefully consider questions before they answer them.
So in the civil context as opposed to the criminal context.
Well, in Boardman,
reckless disregard is sufficient.
Yes, Your Honor.
The Supreme Court didn't overrule its previous opinions to that effect.
No, and actually in Boardman, what the board said sort of along the lines.
This isn't reckless. Boardman is not reckless. If your claim is reckless disregard, you're starting to get in very deep water.
It's
willful
Boardman
disregard.
Boardman is willful disregard for the truth or falsity. That's demonstrated by the knowing submission of an application that has not been conscientiously prepared and inviting the reliance for the purposes of making an important air safety determination regarding an airman's medical qualifications, and that an airman who does this cannot reasonably claim that they did not intend to provide false information because, as the board stated in Boardman, that's the natural and foreseeable consequence of completing an application in a manner where, when you don't read it. And leaving the ALJ's decision undisturbed would allow airmen to intentionally falsify their medical applications and avoid the consequences of having done so by claiming that they didn't read the question. And under Boardman, which is consistent with its reasoning and conclusions of the common law, Mr. Cooper is accountable for his false statements as if he had actual knowledge because his conduct evinces a reckless or willful disregard for the truth.
Could I just understand the practical consequences here? The emergency order went into effect in June of 2010, and it said we will not accept an application for another year.
That's correct.
So he can't fly for a year.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Does he get points in the nature of demerits when he reapplies? I'm just trying to understand what the process is.
The next time he applies, he reads everything,
he answers truthfully.
Right. Then he just has to he has to be reexamined. He has to requalify.
Right. And assume, everything goes smoothly for him. And they get to the end and they say, well, we would issue this certificate, but we note that previously you've been suspended for a year.
I'm trying to
understand the practical effect on Mr. Cooper.
And also
the fact that he was previously...
Is it over already?
I'm sorry?
Is it over?
That's my next question.
It's a year from whenever the emergency order was dated, which was...
Right, that was June of 2010.
Yes, so he was eligible to reapply, June of 2011.
And I suppose counsel knows.
Yeah, and he may know that, but...
So I just want to be clear. If I'm a pilot and for one reason or another I don't, my reapplication is not approved, I can reapply after a year. And there are no adverse consequences of that prior?
Well, that remains an unexpunged violation history for Mr.
Right, but I'm thinking about, driver's licenses. It's not a demerit, or is it a demerit?
Other than it's a record, he has a permanent record of the violation
that previously
resulted in a revocation of a prior certificate. But if he requalifies, then and if he's denied, he will have further process to challenge the denial
if
that happens.
And if this court were to hold that the board, reverse the board, what's the effect of that?
Well, as I said, it would basically allow, airmen to intentionally falsify.
No, for Mr. Cooper.
I'm sorry. If you reversed it?
Yeah. In other words, a year has passed.
Then he wouldn't have to require, if you reversed it and we went back to, it was dismissed, then that record of his violation would be removed, and
I have this gut feeling it means more than that, but I just don't know what it what it means, and I tried to find out from the regulations what it means, and maybe counsel for appellant can tell us if he wants.
Well, if Mr. Cooper reapplied for his certificates and was issued a new pilot certificate after he requalified, he has a violation history. If he commits another regulatory violation, then he may be sanctioned at the top of the range because he has a violation history.
Thank you.
That's the kind of thing.
Thank you.
If the panel has no further questions, I thank the court for its time and request that the petition for review be denied.
Thank you.
One of the interesting things about Boardman is the observation that an airman cannot use the failure to read the form as a defense. The problem is we seem to be shifting the burden. The burden is to prove that the airman falsely did the form. And in this particular case, the administrative law judge was not convinced of that fact. So it isn't going to open some door that every airman is going to come in and say, I never read the form, because Boardman is still going to be there to block that type of activity. What it is going to do is going to allow an exception in a case like this, where you've got evidence which the administrative law judge was entitled to listen to and decide on, and that evidence was the fact that he had already disclosed the problem, already fessed up to the violation. The circumstances are very unique, not likely to happen again.
So if it weren't for that, you would agree that if he hadn't done that, would you agree then that he comes within the statute, within the regulation?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that, but for that exception, some facts which the agency never made any attempt to distinguish,
well,
they don't even address.
I understand that, but if everybody agreed, in a different case, not your case, the
yes,
next case, that the person had not read the form and merely checked the boxes, you would agree that that's a violation of the regulation about intentional falsity.
Under that hypothetical, I wouldn't be standing here today, because your standard of review you wouldn't be here listening to an argument based on that set of facts.
And you don't have any view about the meaning of Global Tech either, I take it.
My view would coincide with what I think Your Honor was saying, and that's that there are circumstances such as these where this is not a willful intent to falsify.
But you're saying that without reading the case, I take it.
That's correct.
Just for my information, has Mr. Cooper reapplied?
No, Your Honor, and I think my understanding of this is not perhaps as good as it should be. But I think my understanding is consistent with what counsel just represented. It's not simply of going and getting another physical. It's a matter of going through the whole training process from day one again. So you're starting over as a new private pilot with zero experience, but you already do, as Your Honor noted, have a couple black marks, because you're going to have to report the driving incident and this incident on every medical form into the future. So it's going to be something that lives with Mr. Cooper or someone like him forever.
All right. Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement.
Thank you. Thank you.
judge's stuff?
No, your judge's.
And that's my judge's.
Oh, okay.
She took her stuff out.